Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rationing when we come back. Well, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Now, traditional American values are individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. These foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. Now, we covet our neighbor's property, and we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures called Federal Reserve Notes. Then we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreigner and alien gods that we call government. And we're not getting away with our crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars that are owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family here in the United States has a $70,000 consumer debt. We owe a nearly $10 trillion national debt. We are surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to around $600 trillion worldwide in derivatives. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. We're living from paycheck to paycheck, and then we've been taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order our free 4-hour compact disc package? That's the place to start. It's an educational, entertaining, it's an informative, and it's a free package. You can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send us an email request. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about rationing. Here in the United States, the concept of rationing is a foreign and alien ideology. We've never had rationing here, at least in the lives of most people breathing and living today. I can still remember rationing. It goes back to World War II. I wore out a pair of shoes when I was a little kid, and the sole was flapping. I finally had to cut it off. You could only get shoes about, I don't know, every 6 weeks or every 3 months, probably every 3 months, or maybe it was every 6 months. I kind of forget now, but anyway. As a little kid, you know, you wore out your shoes, or you outgrew them. We had to take care of them. I remember my granny, you know, if I got a scuff on my new shoes, God, it was just hell to pay. And that's just for scuffing them. And you had to take off your school shoes and then use your play shoes, you see, when you went outside to play. And we had high-top Buster Brown shoes. We didn't wear any low-tops. You had to have things that were practical. Little kids, as well as adults, wore bib overalls during World War II. This came out of the Depression in the 1930s. So people had to make do. They had to get by. The rationing program of the 1940s during World War II was an outgrowth of the Depression years of the 1930s. It really was just an extension of living with or making do. Today, that's a foreign and alien ideology. So as I mentioned before, this concept of rationing is actually the antithesis or the exact opposite to the business model, to the social model that was established by our founding fathers here in the United States and under our Constitution. We're the nation that has, in World War II, for instance, the title of being the bastion of democracy. We were the arms supplier. We were the food producer. We're the ones over here in America and Canada and Australia that produced all of the war material to fight World War II. And so the concept or the idea that in Canada, the United States, or Australia we'd ever see national captivity, or we would ever see rationing, or we would ever see food shortages or famine is foreign and alien to us. We've never experienced this. But Bible prophecy tells us that we're going to experience it. That the three of us, that's the Canadians, Australians, and you New Zealanders down there, and the Americans are going to have their go, their opportunity, to go through the same privation that the European nations went through in World War II. Now that story is located in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28, two chapters. There are six or eight chapters that deal with this, but those are the two primary chapters, those Old Testament stories by Moses, two prophecies. Now, we talked a little about what would be rationed last time, things like cheese, margarine, butter, milk, sugar, jam, tea, eggs, and sweets. But not everywhere. As we took a look at Australia, we found that the Australians had apples until they pulled the apple orchards out. So not everything is going to be rationed. And not everything is going to be rationed everywhere in the world all at the same time. You'll find that in the Far East, where people eat rice as a basic staple, here in the West, if they took all of the rice and we lost it all, I don't think that the average American would miss it. Now, maybe you Asian Americans would miss it, but the rest of us wouldn't. We don't care much about rice. I don't. We eat potatoes here. Now, take our potatoes away from us now. Now, that's a problem. But I think we can live without rice. So the moral to that story is that there's a lot of things that you think that you have to have or that you'd like to have that you can live without. I remember gasoline in World War II was a rationed commodity. We didn't even have an automobile. But then that was nothing new. Most people didn't have automobiles. I remember Ronnie Mitchell's parents had an automobile. It was an old Model A Ford. And you had to have a ration card now in order to get the gasoline to put in the car. So to solve that problem, many people, they registered their cars, even though they didn't drive them. It was common for a family to have three or four cars registered, or two cars anyway. And then they'd get a ration coupon for both cars, but they would put the gasoline into one car. They just drove that one car, and you had to drive it very carefully. And last time I showed you that some people aren't even rationed. You know, doctors and ministers, policemen and volunteer fire departments, they get an X card, or they did in World War II. They can buy all the gas they want. And, of course, the people that can buy all the gas that they want are going to buy all the gas that they can sell on the black market. So last time we were talking about this thing called the black market. The black market in reality, remember, is just it's the free marketplace that is adjusting to an unnatural environment that is imposed upon it politically by government or by a disaster or something on that order. The free marketplace works like a shot, as I demonstrated or I showed you with marijuana and illegal drugs. You're not going to abolish illegal drugs. You're not going to abolish smuggling Mexicans across the Rio Grande River. That's a free marketplace decision. As long as there's people with money and there's people that can evaluate the risk, there's people that are going to do it. And by the way, if you want to know what the numbers are, 97% of the people who attempt to come into the United States illegally succeed. 97%. That's from the Department of Homeland Security. Only 3%. You take all the money that's being spent on that border security and one thing and another, yeah, it keeps out 3% of them. Now, the marketplace is what is driving the people to come from Latin America up to the United States. I mean, there's a solution if you wanted to stop it. What you do is you just kill every illegal and let his body rot in the desert out there, and pretty soon the rest of them will say, you know, those Americans are serious about this border, and so we better not do that. The Russians did that, you know, and in the Cold War, you know, they just shoot people trying to get across the border. They sealed off those borders over there, you know. So, but even though they were sealed off, and even though there was the threat of death, it didn't stop at 100%, but I'll guarantee you that it wasn't 97%. It was more like maybe 3% that were getting across. Now, Americans don't have that kind of mentality. I mean, we're not that serious about border control. My point being that wherever the free market is located, wherever it works, and even in the most adverse of conditions, it's going to be there. You're always going to have this thing that government labels the black market, but it's just a free market. It's free enterprise. So if it makes you feel bad to call it black, well, then that's your problem in life. You can call it green or red or blue or white or whatever market you want to call it. But it's always there. It's always been there. And it's just little guys like you and I that have a need. And then there's entrepreneurs. There's the policeman, the minister, the fireman, or whoever, who can get the gasoline and for a compensation for the risk involved, will deliver it to you. So there's not going to be a shortage of gasoline. There isn't going to be a non-existent gasoline. You may be paying $20 a gallon for it, but it'll be there. You can rest assured it'll be there. Now, there's another thing that's going to be rationed here, and it's medical care. And a lot of you people are dependent upon medical care. You know, if you're on dialysis, if you're a diabetic, if you have some chronic long-term health problem, you need to solve that long-term health problem. For instance, if you have diabetes, you need to cure it. And if you think it's incurable, it isn't. Cancer is not incurable. It's a nuisance, but it's curable. And it has to be taken care of because the medical services are going to break down. And the medical services that you take for granted today, when there is a disaster or when there is a humongous plague or something like that that comes up, then we find out that the healthcare system breaks down. There's just too many customers trying to get the limited amount of services available. So doctors know some patients needing life-saving care will not get it in a flu pandemic or other disaster. This gut-wrenching dilemma will be decided, and they'll be deciding who to let die. So doctors and hospitals and healthcare providers will sort you into what they call triage, three groups, to determine who's going to get the medical services and who isn't. So for bottom feeders like me, I take a look at that headline and I say, okay, well then there's not going to be any medical services for me. Top feeders will get all the medical services. Other people will get them that have ration cards. People like me who do not have ration cards, don't have social security numbers, are not going to be able to get those medical services. So that means that I have to have a plan, I have to have a solution to that problem that's independent from the mainstream. Now, an influential group of physicians has drafted a grimly specific list of recommendations for which patients would not be treated. And they include the very elderly, seriously hurt trauma victims, severely burned patients, and those with severe dementia. So you take a look at all of the AIDS patients, take a look at the elderly, and those that have Alzheimer's disease and so on. When we have a crisis that devolves upon us, these people will be denied medical care. Now today, we can afford to spend that time, effort, and energy on these people and the money involved. And of course, if you're sitting there thinking about, why I could never do that. I mean, most of you people are thinking more about your dogs and cats than you are about grandma and granddad. And I would submit to you that your dogs and cats are going to be further down the list or further down the line than your children. and that you need to be thinking about that up front, that when it comes time to making decisions, that you have a mind, you have a brain, you know, that functions, so that when this disaster occurs, you're able to think logically. That is, dogs and cats don't get taken care of. What about grandma and grandpa? Because here are the doctors and the medical professionals saying, we're going to practice triage on these people that cannot be saved anyway. Now, many of you people out there are concerned about dogs and cats and pets and one thing and another. And I've got a couple of dogs here, and we take care of our dogs, and we've made preparations, you know, to take care of our dogs. But if I have to choose between my sons and daughters and the dogs die, and that's the last argument on it. Nothing more to decide. If I have to decide on where that food is going to go, or where the care or the consideration or the money, et cetera, is going to go, the dogs and the cows, and, you know, now here, for instance, on the farm, when we get into real crisis mode, let me give you an illustration. Back in 1940, they took a census of the deer population in Ozark County. And they went out and they counted them all up, and they could only find 142 deer in the whole county. Now, the normal deer population today is maintained at around 18,000 deer. 18,000 deer in 800 square miles. So let's just work that out, 18,000. Divided by 800. So we have about 22.5 deer per square mile here. And now that same 800 miles divided by 142 deer by count, probably a couple extra, that's 5.6 square miles per deer. You could only find one deer and about every 5.5 square miles. Now, why was that? Well, the people during the Depression years were shooting anything that they could shoot to eat. That's how desperate it was during the Depression years. Now, these people weren't dying of famine, but they were in dire want and dire need. And they went out and killed all the deer. Now, what does that tell me when we get down to where we have famine conditions? Well, then my neighbors around me over here are going to come over and they're going to shoot my cows in the middle of the night and shoot all of my livestock and my sheep. So in the final analysis, there isn't going to be any livestock left in the county. So I'm prepared for that. You know, you have to be thinking ahead. How many of my animals can I keep alive? And the answer is none. Zero. In famine conditions, if nothing else, the military is going to come in and take them. The state highway patrol and the government authorities are just going to come in here and seize what they want. To give you an illustration of that, back in the Civil War years, there's a tier of counties over here, little square boxes on the Kansas border. So the Union Army came in and depopulated all those counties from Joplin, Missouri, up to St. Joseph, Missouri, along the border with Kansas. And they just ordered all the people to leave. And leave everything that you've got here behind. And the Union Army came in, took over all the cows, chickens, dogs, pigs, everything. Now, as it turned out, after the war, those people were compensated for the losses of their property. But during the course of the war, you know, if you get caught in that area, that's a military area, they'd shoot you on sight. So you can expect that again. Now, getting back here to medical services. That's one of the things that they're talking about rationing right now. Now, we haven't got any big problems occurring here in the United States or Canada or Australia, but they're coming. And when they come, you can just bet on these rationing programs being put into operation. So you need to make plans for it up front. Those that are making plans for it and have a game plan will suffer less than those people that don't have any game plan. Hurricane Katrina, when it struck, there was a young woman getting on a bus, and this reporter came up, stuck a microphone under her nose, and said, you're getting on this bus? And she said, I am. And she said, the reporter asked, do you know where you're going? She said, I haven't got a clue. And you're going to get on this bus and go, anything is better than this. Well, now, that's the kind of person that could be loaded on a bus or a train for Auschwitz. It's the way they did it in World War II. The political establishment made living in these ghettos and in the cities for the Jews so intolerable that they willingly got on the trains. Well, that was the first 90%. And then when there was only 10% left, then they stuck a gun in the face of the few of the stragglers behind and said, okay, well, it's such a neat plan over here in Auschwitz that we're just going to send you over there with your compatriots. And when you go, you ain't coming back. So you might want to be thinking about that. When things get really tough, you'll get on the bus and you'll go wherever they take you. You're not going to be asking questions like, well, where is this and does it have green grass and fountains? So you need to be thinking about that ahead of time. When rationing comes, there's going to be privation. There are shortages. Now, World War II, for Americans and Australians and Canadians, there was a little inconvenience. There wasn't any life-threatening problems there. In Germany, now, they had rationing during World War II, and it was much more severe, much more severe. We'll get into that a little later, but the suggested list was compiled. Now, we're talking about triage. We're talking about medical rationing here. By a task force whose members came from prestigious universities, medical groups, the military, and government agencies. They include the Department of Homeland Security, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and the Department of Health and Human Services. So here's your government in operation, determining who's going to live and who's going to die. The purpose or the proposed guidelines are designed to be a blueprint for hospitals, so that everybody will be thinking in the same way. When pandemic flu or other widespread health care disaster hits, said Dr. Asha Devereaux. She's a critical care specialist in San Diego and lead writer of the task force report. The idea is to try to make sure that scarce resources, including ventilators, medicine, and doctors and nurses, are used in a uniform, objective way. The recommendations appear in a report appearing Monday in the May edition of CHEST, the medical journal of the American College of Chest Physicians. If a mass casualty critical care event were to occur tomorrow, many people with clinical conditions that are survivable under usual health care system conditions may have to forego life-sustaining interventions owing to deficiencies in supply or staffing, the report states. Okay, let's try a suitcase nuke. Let's try a terrorist attack. Let's try a false flag operation from our government like 9/11. And where you have mass casualties, you know, a suitcase nuke goes off in downtown Chicago, and there's 100,000 casualties. Well, you people in Chicago don't have enough hospital facilities up there to take care of 100,000. So your government now has got it scoped out in advance as to how they're going to deal with you. So if you have serious burns, you can forget about medical care. So if you have serious burns, then you need to be thinking about how are you going to take care of yourself with these serious burns. Better yet, why don't we think ahead far enough to figure out that maybe downtown Chicago is not a good place to live? That maybe we should evacuate now. Now, there's a prophecy here in the Bible. It's in Matthew chapter 24 that deals with this very, very subject. Let me put a little check mark here in the margin. Matthew 24, the Messiah. This chapter 24 deals with rationing, deals with the Great Tribulation. And he says, except those days should be shortened. In verse 22, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. He went on to say that you want to pray that your flight be not in the wintertime, but that it be or on the Sabbath day, that it be a more convenient time. I took a look at that and I said, you know, with conditions that serious, you people that are living in Watson Lake, you know, up in the Yukon, you're not in a bad location if you stop and think about it. You know, you Australians living out in the outback, you know, out in the boondocks someplace, as opposed to living in downtown Adelaide or someplace, you know, probably a better place to live. If you could avoid those serious burns, if you could avoid those serious diseases, and if when flu pandemic strikes. I mean, if you were out of the big cities and you were out in a rural setting and you could isolate yourself, quarantine yourself, you'd be in a better position, wouldn't you? Now, I know that a lot of you are sitting there saying, "Why, this guy's really a space case. I mean, he's talking way out here in the future." Wait a minute. Excuse me. Hang on a minute. I didn't write this report. I'm giving you a report put out by the Associated Press, CNSnews.com, published in Chest magazine for the medical community of America. You people, you know, all of you Joe Sixpacks out there, you don't read reports like this. I want to remind you that the people that are preparing this over here is the Center for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, Homeland Security. These people are planning on what they're going to do with you, Joe, Mary, Sally. How are we going to deal with you when you've got the flu, when you've been seriously burned? And the answer is, we're going to put you over here in group one and you're going to die. Bottom line. So as a reporter, I thought, well, since the Homeland Security people have decided who's going to live and who's going to die, and they didn't call you on the telephone, Joe, and say, by the way, Joe, we've decided that you're one of those that needs to die, so that you can take preparations or make preparations for yourself. So I come along and say, well, okay, now I can see where I come up in the scenario. And you can rest assured that people like me who don't have a national ID card or a social security number, where in the hell are we going to come up in the pecking order? You know, if I had an ingrown toenail, for crying out loud, and walked into a hospital without my national ID card or my insurance card, they're going to, you know, send me over here in the corner and say, hey, go over there and suffer and do it in quiet. Keep you, hold your peace. All right, so now I know that up front, so I'm not going to waste my time going to the hospital or to the ER. It's a waste of my time, effort, and energy, and it's a waste of their precious medical resources. So I need to take care of myself. I need to look ahead and prepare for this rationing, because this is what they're telling me. To prepare, hospitals should designate a triage team with the godlike task. Let me underline that. Godlike task of deciding who will and who will not get life-saving care. That's what the task force wrote. This is your government taxes in action. This is what you're paying for. This is where your money's going. Those out of luck are the people at high risk of death and a slim chance of long-term survival. But the recommendations get much more specific and they include people older than 85. Okay? So now if you're 85 years old, or if you're 80 and you think you might live another 5 years, when you walk in the door and you present your national health care card, which you're going to get, by the way, you got national health care insurance coming up, national socialized medicine, they'll just take a look at it and say, well, you're too old, and so therefore you go over into group one. Oh, you've got diabetes, you go over to group one. Oh, you've got AIDS, you go over to group one. In other words, your masters are going to decide who lives and who dies. And so I took a look at that and I said, well, okay. I'm a bottom feeder. I can see that there's no point in me wasting my time going to the hospital. I better be making plans and preparations for little Georgie Gordon right now up front, if there's going to be any plans or preparations made. So now that you know medical care is going to be rationed, just like coffee and gasoline will be rationed, some of these things get down to where they, you know, push comes to shove. Now, if you're a diabetic and you've got to have insulin, and there's a shortage of insulin, and you're 80 years old and a diabetic, or 85 years old and a diabetic, and there's a guy over here that's 20 years old and he's a diabetic, well, guess where the insulin's going, you old fart? Huh? Wake up, Tom. Wake up. Now, the fact that you're 85 doesn't mean that you won't live to be 94 or 102, but not without your insulin, remember? And so if you're a diabetic now, it's time to start thinking about curing this diabetes so that I'm not dependent upon the Homeland Security folks. Now, they're not going to kill you. They're just not going to save you. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our webpage as well. All of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, opinions, beliefs, etc., of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can just call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about rationing, and then specifically health care rationing. Now, this is a report that's put out by the Public Health Service, by the Associated Press, and CNSNews.com, dated May 5th, 2008, titled Triage. Plan would bar treatment of the elderly, chronically ill in medical disasters. Now, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world, and I'm not finding fault now with the CDC or with the triage concept. I understand how that works. This triage thing, in case you hadn't been briefed on it, let's take 100 people, and let's take them in Hiroshima. The bomb has just been dropped. And there are people over here that are badly burned. I mean, these people are really badly burned. So badly burned that they've got to have immediate help. They're going to have long-term hospital care. You know, maybe two or three nurses working on them, you know, day and night, 24 hours a day to save their lives. Let's take 10 of those. Then you got another 10 people out of this 100 over here. They're burned also, but they're not burned as bad. And if you gave them medical care, and they'd probably survive. This first group of 10 over here, it's really dicey. It's iffy. They probably won't survive no matter what you do, but maybe one or two of them might. This other group of 10 over here, now if you treat them and you take care of them, they probably all 10 of them would survive, or at least 8 or 9 of them. Then you got a third group over here of 10, and they're burned. But even if you don't do anything to them, don't give them any pain medication or anything, they're going to survive anyway. All 10 of them. Now, you have enough medical supplies here for 10 people. You got 30 people that are burned. You got enough supplies for 10. One group of 10 over here are going to die no matter what you do. One group of 10 over here are going to suffer. They're going to have pain, but they're going to survive no matter what you do. And then you got a group of 10 over here that will probably die, but if you give them medical attention and spend what medical resources you have on that 10, you'll probably save them, or most of them. So the triage concept says, well, the 10 that are going to die anyway, let them die. And the 10 that don't need any medical services, leave them alone. And the group of 10 over here that with medical services could probably be saved are where we're going to spend our scarce resources. Now, let's just picture this in a rationing scenario. Remember, we here in America now import most of what we consume. We produce about $200 billion a year and export it. And then we consume about $1 trillion a year, that's $1,000 billion, of imported goods. Now that's a deficit of $800 billion a year. If you've got the money to pay for it, that's not a problem. But we don't have the money, and we haven't had the money, and we have been putting it on the cuff. And the dilemma that we Americans find ourselves in is that we owe more money than we can pay. Our creditors now have the machine tools and the equipment that make our shoes. And when we're talking about importation, we're talking about importing the ingredients to make the insulin out of. Now, it is true that we used to be self-sufficient in this country, but we're no longer self-sufficient. We're now interdependent in this new world order, this new world economy. And so it's cheaper to produce insulin in China than it is to produce it in Poughkeepsie, New York. So we don't have factories that do that here. We buy it from the Chinese or the Japanese or somebody else. So now we've got so much in the way of supplies. And when this is shut off, these healthcare professionals are going to have to decide, well, now we have this limited amount of insulin, and who are we going to give it to? And as I showed you just a few minutes ago, if you're 85 or older, you're not going to get it. So if you're 85 or older, or if you're 80 and you're approaching 85, well, then you should start thinking about that right now, shouldn't you, Joe and Tom? Now, people that are older than 85, those with severe trauma, which could include critical injuries from car crashes and shootings. All right? So if you come down in a car crash or a shooting and they take you to the hospital, they may take a look at you and say, well, we're not going to spend our scarce medical resources on you. Severely burned patients older than 60. Now remember, you're all going to have national ID cards. So when you come into the hospital, they just run a scanner over your hand and they take the information right off of your embedded chip in your hand or in your forehead. And they'll have your age, name, age, and date, and address, and social security number, all the critical information. They'll just run right down and say, take this guy out here and put him on the garbage heap. They'll know exactly what to do with you because they got a plan invoked. Now, the reason I'm bringing this to your attention is your government agencies now have a plan that they're going to follow that determines whether you live or die. Don't you think that you should have a plan that determines whether you live or die? Now, if you want somebody else to make that determination for you, you're on the right track. Just sit back, relax, you don't have to do anything. It's all being done for you. If, on the other hand, you're sitting there saying, oh, well, maybe I better start thinking about taking care of myself. It's a wild new concept, I got to tell you, here in America, but... yeah, that's right. Maybe you better start thinking about taking care of yourself. Those with severe mental impairment, which could include advanced Alzheimer's disease. Right? So you got somebody here on Alzheimer's. Now, next week I'm going to report to you on aluminum poisoning, and I'll tell you the story about this thing of Alzheimer's, where it comes from, just like autism. You know, it's got a source, it's got a cause. We didn't always have autism. We didn't always have Alzheimer's. We didn't always have AIDS. These are diseases that have come up in the last 30 years. So we might as well take a look at these chronic diseases, look at their causes, and then see if we can't avoid that. A stitch in time saves nine. I think that it makes more sense to avoid getting Alzheimer's disease. Avoid getting autism. I got a student here the other day. I got to tell you a story here. Called up. and he has a little child, and this little child has autism. And the child developed autism about 1 week after she had received her vaccinations. So my wife said to him, well, the vaccine has thimerosal in it, and that's what caused the child's autism. He gasped and said, oh my God. So next part of the scenario was, he said, well, what are we going to do to solve the problem? My wife says, you're not, but you can avoid that happening again. His wife was pregnant. Well, his wife had the second child. And so the second child, his wife is going to take that child in and give that child vaccines also. See, there's some of you people out there that are so wedded to the government propaganda mill that there's no hope for you. I mean, you've been practicing this medical agenda of your government for so long, you don't know of any other way, don't know of any other solution. So, you know, you people just pack it in. Now, there's some other people that you can bring this information to, and they look at it and say, oh my God, I didn't know that. Okay, well, now you do. So now what are you going to do about it? Well, if this guy had something, you know, that he had a choice to make, he would stop giving the children vaccine, which makes all the sense in the world. But that isn't the politically correct modality. And women especially seem to be wedded to this politically correct modality. It's the herd instinct. We see this with sheep. You know, you take one the lead sheep. There's a leader, and all the rest of them follow that leader. So if you can get that leader to go through the gate, you got it made. But if you can't get that leader through the gate, you're not getting the rest of them through the gate either. Now, that's just the way that goes. Now, I'm not trying to lead you people through any gates, and I don't really care whether you have autism or not. No skin off my back. I don't have autism. My children don't have autism. I knew what caused it, and I avoided it. And I'm very happy with the decision I made. Now, if you've got an autistic child, I'm not totally calloused. I hear you. I can feel your pain. I'm sympathetic. But you know, you caused it. Wake up. You caused it. You did it. You had to get up in the morning, dress that child, and take that child down to the doctor's office to get those shots. You put money out, partner. I mean, you paid for that. That wasn't something imposed upon you by some stranger. Now, you did that to yourself. And your excuse is, well, I didn't know. I just didn't know. Okay. Well, the world's full of ignorant people that didn't know. And then it comes back and it bites them in the butt, and that's the way life is. It's not that way because I made it that way. It's that way because, as a reporter, I'm reporting to you that outside of Barney and Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers, there's reality. And, you know, it's time to face reality, and that's why I'm making this report. And the report is people older than 85, those with severe trauma, which could include critical injuries from car crashes and shootings, severely burned patients older than 60, those with severe mental impairment, which could include advanced Alzheimer's disease, and here's the last one, those with severe chronic disease, such as advanced heart disease, lung disease, or poorly controlled diabetes. All right, so now you're a sicko, and you've got heart trouble. You know, you got a pacemaker or whatever. Now, just extrapolate this out. Now, this is just a brief list to give you some examples to follow. Now, if you've got, in short, if you've got any kind of medical problems over here that are serious, you can save yourself the rationed gasoline, taking yourself or your loved one to the emergency room, because you're not going to get any services when you get there. They're going to sort you out and put you on the death heap. So that means that you've got to be able to take care of that yourself, which means that whatever medical services, whatever medical supplies that you're going to need, you're going to need. All right, now let me tell you a little story here about oxygen. In all probability, you will be able to get oxygen. Now, they have what they call medical oxygen. Say medical. Now, the difference between medical oxygen and industrial oxygen is the bottle that it comes in. Boys and girls, oxygen is oxygen is oxygen. So, if you need medical oxygen, you know, and you're sitting there saying, oh my God, I got to go down to the medical supply store to get my bottle of oxygen, you can also get it down at the welding store. And you can get it for half price, maybe less. Now, I'm not here to prescribe that you go down to the welding store to get your oxygen, you know, today. You know, you should be spending two or three times more than that to support the medical establishment. And because they need the money, you know, those doctors and nurses, they all have mortgages to pay, just like you and I and everybody else. But, I mean, when we get down to where push comes to shove and you've got bronchitis, or you've got my Aunt Bessie, I remember, was on oxygen. And in her house, she had about four or five bottles of oxygen. Always these little bottles. I asked my Aunt Bessie about that. I said, Aunt Bessie, why don't you get a big bottle of oxygen? Oh, they don't sell big bottles of oxygen at the oxygen supply store. Medical supply store. They always sell these little bottles. She had about five or six of those little bottles. And she had emphysema, my Aunt Bessie did. And now she lived to be 85 years old or so. With emphysema, from 65 to 85, she had emphysema for 20 years. And I hate to think that my Aunt Bessie, at age 85, had been consigned to die because, you know, she was chronically ill. So if it were me and it was my Aunt Bessie, you know, and my Aunt Bessie had emphysema, I would be making preparations today to take care of my Aunt Bessie outside the medical establishment, who have just told me that your Aunt Bessie, who's age 85, ain't going to get her oxygen. So I'd be storing up some big bottles. Now, these big bottles of oxygen, you know, are dirt cheap. God, they last, you know, when you're breathing the stuff. I mean, you know, when you're cutting steel, you know, they you use up quite a bit. But, you know, if you're just breathing the stuff. And I've got another machine over here. I can move that oxygen from one big bottle over to another bottle. I got an adapter so that I could move the oxygen, you know, from big bottles into little bottles, because the little bottles kind of fit onto the little cart, you know, that you carry around with you to the shopping mall as you're walking around. Now, there's solutions to every problem. Now, the better solution is to get out of the target zone so that you don't get burned to start with. But if you just have to live in downtown Chicago, then you're going to run a risk of getting burned when a nuke is dropped or getting killed. I mean, you know, might be better for you if you just get killed. But what we're trying to do here is survive. And our objective here is, well, you know, can we survive? Now, I'm an old man, and I don't want to die. And so as an old man, I'd look at this and I say, uh-oh, this does not bode well for old people like me, especially leaving my long-term medical care in the hands of total strangers at the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia. I really think that I'd rather have control over my life and death struggle here in Isabella, Missouri, rather than to put it in the hands of some nameless, faceless bureaucrat in a far, far city far, far away. Now, you can make your choice and do what you want to do. Dr. Kevin Yaski, he's the director of the Preparedness and Emergency Operations Office at the Department of Health and Human Services, was on the task force. He said the report would be among many the agency reviews as a part of its preparedness efforts. Now, what are these people preparing for? I mean, here's your tax dollars at use here, or you know, in operation. And they are preparing to decide who lives and who dies. All right, so I think that when somebody's deciding whether George Gordon lives or dies, that George Gordon ought to have a say in the decision. You know, there are people that make those kinds of decisions. There was a young man, 19 years old, the other day received the Congressional Medal of Honor. Somebody had thrown her a hand grenade, came into their Humvee or whatever it was. And so this young man, age 19, threw himself on the hand grenade and was killed, but he saved four other men that were in the machine, in the vehicle. He made a conscious decision. Had he not done that, probably all five of them would have been killed. By making that decision to sacrifice himself, it killed him and saved the other four guys. There's a scripture in the Bible that talks about that. A man has no greater friend than he who gives his life for his friends. I mean, there's no greater friend than a man that gives his life for his friends. Now, that young man will come up in the resurrection. So, you know, if you're concerned about his life and death, well, we're all coming up in a resurrection, whether we like it or not. I would like to postpone my day of reckoning with the resurrection as long as possible. I'm not anxious to go to heaven. I'm not getting on the bandwagon and suggesting, you know, that we all give our hearts to Jesus and let's all go to heaven. I'm going to stay right here as long as possible. And that's my druthers. Now, public health law expert Lawrence Gostin of Georgetown University called the report an important initiative, but also a political minefield and a legal minefield. Okay? Yeah, I can see that. The recommendations would probably violate federal laws against age discrimination and disability discrimination, said Gostin, who was not on the task force. Now, let me pause here for a moment. The public health officials are not whistling Dixie through a straw hat. When a nuclear weapon is dropped, I mean, you can sit here and talk about all the niceties of age discrimination. But out here in the real world, you know, take those airplanes that crashed into the Twin Towers, you know, down on the ground where reality is located, where the firemen are dead in the buildings, and other firemen are trying to pull bodies and body parts and maybe critically injured people out of the rubble. The last thing that those people are thinking about is the potential lawsuits that are involved here. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here, Mr. Rogers, because in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, everything turns out peachy king at the end of the program. And the little trolley goes around on the tracks and everybody's happy, and now we can go out and play in the sandbox. But in the real world, that isn't where life is. And life and death is going to be decided by policemen and firemen and people that are on the scene and medical personnel and hospital people. And so I'm simply looking at this pragmatically and saying, okay, from where George Gordon is sitting here in the pecking order, I need to make plans. I've got to do something for me, for my family, for my Aunt Bessie, for the people around me. I've got to solve that oxygen problem for my Aunt Bessie. Now, she's dead and buried, so I don't want you to get mixed up here. My Aunt Bessie, you know, she lived for the last 20 years with her oxygen bottle, but I wanted to point out that if my Aunt Bessie was alive today and I read this report and she was living with me or close by me, I would be making preparations for my Aunt Bessie. Now, as it turns out, I don't have too many Aunt Bessies that I need to prepare for, except maybe myself and my wife and it might be my wife. This may not happen for another 5 years or so, but you can rest assured this is coming to a city near you where you live in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, or the United States. I mean, this is where reality is located. All four of us are bankrupt. I don't know if you knew that down in New Zealand, Australia. You people are bankrupt. And you're importing more than you export. And you're going to get shut off. And rationing is coming your way, along with about 1 billion Chinese. It won't take 1 billion of them, but that's about how many are going to move down there. Now, if followed to a T, such rules could exclude care for the poorest, most disadvantaged citizens who suffer disproportionately from chronic disease and disability. And while health care rationing will be necessary in a mass disaster, there are some real ethical concerns here. Oh, Jesus, give me a break, would you? Ethical concerns. You know, when the Germans were dropping bombs on London, you know, and the city is in flames and there's people dead and dying all around you over here, well, we've just got these ethical concerns. Boys and girls, you need to wake up to reality. When disaster occurs, there aren't any ethical concerns. There's just survivors and victims. when you're on the Titanic, there are ethical concerns. Who gets in the lifeboats? Women and children. But that's been a part of Anglo-Saxon administration for thousands of years. Hell, we all knew, you know, old Ben Guggenheim, you know, he said, don't ever let it be said that old Ben Guggenheim didn't have the gonads to die. And that's what he said to his friends. And so he was a man, and he went in, sat down in the A-deck lounge, and had a couple of drinks. You know, this ship is going to sink, and I'm going to sink with it. He knew that the women and children get into the boats first. Now, old Ben should have been thinking about the prospects of this ship sinking before he bought a ticket. You know, when he bought the ticket, he knew that they had lifeboats on there for about half the people. Would you like to buy a ticket on a ship that has lifeboats for half the people? Well, the ships don't sink very often. It's really not that big a deal. But, you know, but when the ship sinks, wake up to reality. James Bentley, he's a senior vice president at American Hospital Association, said the report will give guidance to hospitals in shaping their own preparedness plans, even if they don't follow all of the suggestions. And he said that the proposals resemble a battlefield approach to which limited health and health care resources are reserved for those most likely to survive. Bentley said it's not the first time this type of approach has been recommended for a catastrophic pandemic, but that this is the most detailed one I have seen from a professional group. Now, boys and girls, your government is getting prepared for a disaster. How come? They weren't getting prepared for this disaster in 1960 or 70 or 80, but they are now in 2008. What's going on? Well, the disaster that they're preparing for is getting closer and closer. And it's the New World Order. It's the collapse of the old world order, the destruction of the world's economy, the destruction of the world's major power, the United States of America. And in this new world order, this new transition that's coming down on us, there's going to be some death and destruction. There's going to be some decision-making that needs to be made. And so they're making the decisions now up front and in advance. And that's what I'm suggesting that you do. As it relates to preparedness, it also relates to rationing. There's going to be a rationing of insulin. There's going to be a rationing of medical oxygen. There's going to be decisions made as to who gets the services and who doesn't. So wake up. Pay attention. Now, if you're a young fellow, 22 years old, and, you know, 30 years old, and you don't have any medical problems, keep it that way. Start eating a little better and don't get those medical problems to start with. If you've got medical problems, get rid of them. You need to solve those medical problems so that you don't need the insulin to start with. And if you can't, then you need to make preparations to store your own oxygen or your own insulin. That's where reality is. Can you say rationing, boys and girls? Well, let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over radio and the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.